You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we take it with pride, especially Elliot. Joining me this week via Skype from the House of Mouse, Elliot Rivera. How are you, Elliot?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to this particular episode of Skype.
Yeah, why is that?
Oh, I've got a lot of things to say about pretty much almost everything on this subject on our outline today, so.
Yeah, well, that's because we've been on a hiatus for a couple of weeks, and there's been a lot of things that have happened. I mean, we can't even, there's so much to talk about, we can't even talk about Ariana Grande licking donuts this week, so.
Oh, yeah, that commie bitch. I mean, yeah.
She's a kid, she doesn't know what she's saying.
I think I hate her because I hate her brother more.
Well, he's only famous because of her, so I can understand that. This week, though, we are unfortunately missing Daniel. We're going to be missing him for a couple of weeks, so we'll have a couple of guest hosts here. This week, via Skype, from the Deep South, Ronnie James Dio. How are you, RJD?
I'm just living the dream, Justin. Thank y'all for having me.
Well, if living the dream is being on our podcast, the American dream has surely been redefined to have a lot lower standards.
It has. Has it not?
That's true. That's very, very true. I didn't quite mean it as social commentary, but yeah, if we're going to get into it, I agree.
If you want to get really into it, the American dream is dead.
Are you doing it on your Obama phone?
Well, Dusty Rhodes is dead. He's the American dream.
Oh, that's true. I didn't even think of that. Well done. You're going to fit in just fine here in the midside. So let's go to one of our usual segments. But we're going to change it a little bit this week. It's time for the news without Daniel T. Richards. The Supreme Court took over the United States over the 2 weeks that we were gone. Landmark rulings legitimized Obamacare, legitimizing quotes, and also legalized gay marriage throughout the country, sending Facebook crazy. Suddenly, everyone had multicolored profile pictures. I didn't find two fancy articles like Daniel did because I don't think any two articles are going to be able to capture this. But you know who I do think could capture this issue? Our gay member of our triumvirate here. Elliot, what do you have to say about these? Because I think you're probably going to have an interesting stance. You would think more freedom equals good with gay marriage, right? They should be allowed to have the same rights as everyone else.
Yeah. This whole thing, first of all, thank you for gay members. That was a nice visual to have in my head. This has been a very interesting because in both situations, people are very angry with Chief Justice John Roberts. Really quickly, with Obamacare, they basically told the people from the benches of the Supreme Court that something that is explicitly written in text into the law is not in fact what it says. The law actually says that the exchanges were to be established by the state, or that the rules, the guidelines were to be established by the state. And it was clearly meant in the letter of the law that the individual states are going to handle their own exchanges. What the Obama administration actually wound up doing was trying to formulate and to facilitate the exchanges from the federal government. And so the suit alleges, no, this is what the letter of the law says. The letter of the law says that the states are supposed to be in charge, not the federal government. And what John Roberts said is, well, you know, we see what, you know, I see what you're saying, but clearly they meant it to be the federal government, so that's what they meant, so that's what's gonna stand. And which is why people got really pissed off at him. Then the next day, the ruling on gay marriage came down. And if you've listened to the podcast for a long time, you know how I feel about this issue. Of course, I really, truly, I support marriage equality, but I support it without any government involvement whatsoever. Getting government completely out of marriage, 100%. And I especially despise suing bed and breakfast owners and religious organizations to try to perform ceremonies or perform any service for gay wedding ceremonies that they don't want to do.
Any service for gay wedding ceremony.
Exactly.
Even for the bachelor parties.
They might do a bachelor party. That's a good question. They might not do a wedding, but they might do the bachelor party. But here, I mean,
when's the first stripper going to be sued for refusing to do a performance for a gay bachelor party?
I don't think if a stripper's going to do the party, by the way, because first of all, strippers tend to be good capitalists. They know how to make money and they appreciate the art of making money and exchanging value for value. So I don't think that they would refuse a service to refuse that anyway.
I would just love a news story to break of a Christian stripper refusing to strip for a gay bachelor party. I just think that would be a delicious news story.
So have you ever met a Christian stripper, Justin?
I haven't met many strippers, so no.
Well, I mean, isn't that like jumbo shrimp?
Well, that's why it would be awesome, because it's a Christian stripper. That's the first level.
So you want them to like be grinding on you and say, hey, have you ever given your life to Jesus Christ?
Yes.
Hold up. Def Leppard's coming on. I've got to go to the main stage.
They pour some sugar on me and then Amazing Grace comes on in the playlist. That works perfect. Yeah. The whole thing about it, like what people are really pissed off at is that they're looking at it from the perspective of, the Supreme Court should not have made the decision on gay marriage. For all the states, the state should have done it themselves. And of course, we here at the Mid-Side, if I can speak for all of us, but we don't subscribe to the concept of states' rights. We subscribe to the concept of individual rights. That's what we uphold. That's what we believe in. So even a state government should not be telling people what they can and can't do in terms of marriage. So even
don't tell me what I can't do.
Exactly. So I think conservatives are upset and they're apoplectic. And even though some of it is valid, I think a lot of it is completely misguided because they're angry about the wrong thing. They're not angry about an infringement on people's rights. They're angry about the fact that they think that that infringement should be on a local level and not on a broader federal level.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting in general the reaction from both sides of the spectrum here, because I think it shows that both sides have just sort of automatized their reactions. So on the right, it just became a states' rights religious thing. Oh, well, now immediately they're going to attack our religion and try to take that away from us. Which I'm not saying they're not going to do that, but I'm saying you're not thinking through the issues. And then on the left, it immediately became attempting to socially shame anyone who disagreed with them. And the biggest butt of this for both issues was Judge Scalia.
Yeah.
Where just because he disagreed with the leftist position, the media tore him apart and made him into a loon. They made him look like a nutcase. And the media is so good at this nowadays. Anyone who does not toe the status quo, the line, they make look like some sort of insane person, for lack of a better term, to sound uneducated.
It's true. And look at what George Takei did to Clarence Thomas, that comment about him being a clown in blackface. Any of us had said it, it would have been racist or charged with racism. I mean, we would have all been publicly humiliated, publicly shamed, but George Takei can say it and nothing will be done about it. And it's just absurd. Absurd that he can be racist against Clarence Thomas for being a conservative and for voting Republican, when he himself, George Takei, votes for the party that literally imprisoned him in the 40s.
Yeah, but that's in the past, Elliot. We don't live in a world that cares about facts and history. I constantly get bombarded by posts, and I'm all over the political spectrum back and forth, but I do get irritated when I see a list of all the accomplishments the Democratic Party has made, and ending segregation and helping civil rights is one of them. I was born in the Deep South, and my grandfather and father grew up, and we know what Democratic governors did during the 50s and the 60s. And they want to pretend it didn't happen, but it did happen. And those people had a D at the end of their names.
That's right.
But today it's like your rights aren't important if you disagree with the mob. It's just the way it is. And, people just bake some pizzas and take it to the wedding. You know, you're not going to be gay if you sell them some pizza. Okay. God's not going to be mad at you if you bake a cake. Just do it. And I think the whole right-wing conservative movement is really missing the ball on this whole thing, because I really dig what you said about individual rights. And I do feel like we should have the individual right to say, I don't want to serve this person. Is it bigotry is bad. Racism is bad, but freedom's not bad. And you're always going to have some jerk that don't want to serve somebody, but isn't it America?
Yeah.
Right. And that's exactly the point, distinguishing between those two things. In a rational world, you should want to bake a cake for anyone who comes into your store. And I use that loosely because I already see an attack coming down the pipeline. But that's different between saying the government should tell people they can't tell people no. Because here's the thing. If I owned a store and I owned a bakery, hypothetically, I wouldn't care if it was for a gay wedding or not. Unless the people came in and were like, this is a gay wedding to prove that gay weddings are moral and they're the right thing to do. And then I would be like, well, you know what? Fuck you. I'm not making you a cake because I don't want to be part of your fucking agenda. And then they would get mad at me. But why is it legitimate to distinguish between who you serve to or not based upon things like that? And you can't do it based upon, race, religion, those kind of things. Because we've created these things in PC society that it's okay to not discriminate against.
And what's stupid is that we all discriminate. All of us. It's a necessary part of our cognition. When we get into our epistemology discussions about concepts and differentiation and integration, a very key component of that is discrimination. We all have to discriminate between what's poisonous for us and what's good for us. The people who are good for us, the people who are bad for us, the music that we love, the music that we don't love, that we hate. It's all an act of discrimination. We all do it. So trying to outlaw it or to try to frame it as some form of social evil is misguided. We all do it, and we need to do it. Our survival depends on it.
Oh, that's pretty powerful. I missed a couple weeks of church, so you guys might have to inform me, but why don't they want homosexuals to be married? I mean, if they're totally against homosexuality, wouldn't that be one of the easiest ways? I mean, it's almost like the flying the rebel flag on your car, isn't it? Like a way you can, or for even a worse example, it's like the N-word. Don't say the N-word. Well, do say the N-word. That way you can tell exactly who the racists are. Homosexuals are getting married. Look, there they are. There's homosexuals. Why wouldn't the Christians want homosexual to get married? The homosexuals have had it too good. They need to get married. See how bad marriage really is.
It goes back to what you were saying about not caring about facts or anything. Is they're not focused on reality. They're focused on principles disconnected from reality. And they're just sort of, because they feel like they're attacked all the time, they're sort of flailing in the wind, and this is on both sides. They're flailing in the wind to just defend anything that comes up. I mean, this is why we see this all the time, where we see the Twitter activism, and we'll talk about that a little later when we get to Comic-Con. But that's why we see this all the time, because people have no real reality they're trying to create for themselves, a reality they're trying to live in. They're just sort of blowing in the wind to whatever way makes them feel like they're standing up for themselves.
Right. And we have to remember that there's a lot of package dealing going on here too, because when you're talking about
gay marriage, it's all package dealing.
Package dealing, yeah, it is kind of packaging one with the other packages. But there's this idea that a homosexual person is automatically on the same par with a pedophile, an adulterer, a drug addict, an alcoholic. To a, in a Christian mind, and not maybe not all of them, but I think in a lot of Christian minds, a gay person is an equivalent to all of that. He's a sinful person who wants to destroy the culture, and she wants to diminish traditional family values and such. And of course, that's hogwash, because gay people, they can't be looked at in the same way you look at an alcoholic or a drug addict or somebody like that who wants, you know, who they think wants to diminish and destroy civil society. There's a lot of package stealing going on here. It's not just gay marriage. It's the idea that the devil is winning. It's the idea that the culture, the family life, the gays are coming for the children, and that the adulterers and the strippers and it's this whole incoherent abstraction that has them cowering in fear. So when something like the Supreme Court ruling happens, and again, I'm not saying that there are not legitimate concerns about the ruling, about the opinion, although even if not necessarily the outcome, but I do think that a lot of Christians do package deal, and the left does it too. I mean, let's be clear, the left loves to package deal, that if, for example, in my case, I stand with the baker in Colorado who had to close his business because he didn't want to bake a cake. Now, should the man have baked the damn cake? Yes. Absolutely. It's not offensive because he was anti-gay. It was offensive because he was a bad capitalist. Like, make the damn money. But now that the government has come in and the people have tried to sue him, and they actually wound up closing his business down because he couldn't afford the legal fees, now I'm in the uncomfortable position of having to stand beside this person, you know? And because of that, I get labeled self-hating. I get labeled as being anti-gay, even though I am a gay man myself. There is a lot of it. I mean, nobody... I'm trying to find a really good way to articulate it. It's like a big bowl of fish hooks. You know, you can't just pick one up. You pick one up and they all come along. You know what I mean?
It's definitely tougher to talk about than bat flack.
Well, we'll get to that in a minute too. We're setting up the Comic-Con, this segment here very well. I like all this foreshadowing that's going on. But let's talk about another issue right now that deals with a lot of disconnect from reality and a lot of package dealing and a lot of confusion. And that's the relations between the genders. This comes up a lot here on the Midside. And we had another news story this week that kind of dealt with that sort of issue. The headline reads, "Video shows FSU quarterback punching woman at a bar."
Ugh.
Here's the first few lines. "The moment captured on camera escalates quickly. In one frame, Florida State University quarterback DeAndre Johnson, 19, is seen arguing with a woman in a crowded bar. In the next frame, she raises a fist. He grabs her arm. She attempts to hit him. He punches her in the face. The incident took place June 24th inside Yanni's nightclub in Tallahassee, Florida." Okay, so here's the thing about this issue. It's amazing to me the way this video is seen differently by different people. To me, the description of this article is what happened, and she's the one getting aggressive towards him. Now, in a second we can talk about, even though she was the one getting aggressive, did he have a right to punch her? But a lot of people are watching this video saying he initiated force, he was the one getting aggressive, and I just didn't see that. What did you guys see in the video?
I saw him reaching for her ball, or her reaching for his balls, like trying to punch his nuts.
And that's why he grabbed her arm, and that's why she swung with the other arm?
I think so, yeah. I mean, from what I saw.
What did you see in the video, RJD?
I was kind of sickened by it on a couple different levels, and, you know, there is no right. There's enough blame to go around for both people. But somebody attacks you, sometimes you just react. And the sad thing about it is that a girl got punched in the face and a kid's life probably got changed. I mean, there are very few golden tickets in life. And this kid had one. And just because you have talent doesn't mean you get a free college scholarship, doesn't mean you get drafted into the NFL. And this is going to be with him for the rest of his life. We may never see this kid again. And at the very least, he had a free college tuition paid for, all because he lost his cool in one moment. And attacked a girl that he perceived was attacking him. I mean, this is the mid side, so I'm just trying to shoot you straight. If this was the RJD show, I would tell you that, I believe in equal rights, and you get punched by a woman, you can punch her back, or.
No, that's fair to say in the mid side. That's shooting it straight.
I would maybe even spin it like, you know, hey, how did he know that that was a woman? Maybe it was, it was someone that was trans or something. I mean, I don't know.
In today's day and age, you're 100% correct. We don't know.
But you know, the truth of the matter could be as far to the one side or far to the other. You could say, hey, don't mess with the bull or you get the horns. And the flip side of that is it's not okay to do that to anybody in any circumstance, especially when you are representing a university that's giving you $100,000 worth of free school.
And that's the thing I think is the most salient point here is, yeah, we can debate all day who is in the right and who is in the wrong. And there's definitely a lot of the crazy feminist movement here trying to make it look like, this guy DeAndre is the worst of the worst. But what this really is an immature kid where he should have realized, as RJD is saying, what's at stake here? Do you really need to get to the bar that badly that you're going to give up your entire future? Because there's probably a high likelihood he would have ended up on at least a practice squad somewhere and have been making six figures for a few years. And like you said, I think it was a really good point that his life has changed forever simply because he didn't keep that perspective. He didn't realize, oh wow, how is this going to affect my life in the long run? He made more of an emotionless decision. But then again, like you also said, he was reacting in the moment and he felt threatened. And isn't that true equality, Elliot? If you're not looking at who the other person threatening you is, you're just saying, oh, this is a threat. I'm going to respond to it.
It almost doesn't matter. Look, I'm going to tell you a personal story, all right? My mother was going grocery shopping, and she had put one of the shopping carts off to the side so that, you know, none of the other carts were going to run into it. People could still park. But she was a little too far from the store entrance. And, you know, my mother's getting up there in years. She's in her 60s. Walking is a little bit difficult for her and stuff. So she parked the cart off to the side. And this woman got out of the car across from her and basically started yelling at my mother. Now, I wasn't there for that incident. But I tell you guys, if I had been there and witnessed it, that other woman would probably have been dead or at the very least in traction. So for me, it almost doesn't matter. Now, I don't care what a woman does to me or a man. You scuff with me, I'll scuff right back. But generally speaking, I can keep my cool. But if it's something like my family, then your ass is grass. So I'm sympathetic to this guy. And not just because I have to root for FSU as a Florida boy. But, I mean, as a guy who lives in Florida, I mean, I go Seminoles. But I think that in this instance, I have to side with him here. A little bit, because she was coming, and you don't know. And I'm sorry, but there is truth to that Sex and the City episode. Angry women are freakishly strong. Like, they get crazy. There is a case to be made that when a woman is angry, sometimes they can be really, really, really vicious. So I sympathize with the guy. I hate to say it, but I do.
I'm not gonna try to define whether the actions were correct or not to a normal individual, but I'm going to tell you why you're wrong in this particular instance is because this kid is not just a college student. This kid is an FSU football player, and that is supposed to mean something. And when you jeopardize your scholarship, That's wrong. You know, that should be the first thing he's thinking of. Even if he doesn't care about the well-being of other people or the well-being of a drunk girl at a bar, which is a completely different issue. But this thing begins and ends with you have a responsibility when you're an athlete. And this guy forgot about it. And I'm happy that they kicked him off. And there's too much of this in sports anyway. Just watch the women, USA women win the World Cup. And I'm having to be reminded that one of them is a wife beater.
Yeah, don't even get me started on Hope Solo. You know, Ray Rice does this whole thing, and because there's a video, he's kicked out of the league. But Hope Solo beats up her sister and her nephew, and nothing happens with it.
It's just, there's just too much of it in sports. And so anytime somebody gets the boot for crossing that line, I support it. Look, there's plenty of athletes. You know, this kid, he was special. He's a good quarterback. But you know what? There's five other guys waiting in line to take his place that ain't hit nobody in a bar. And that's life.
Right. And ultimately, it's important to remember that sports are more than just physical ability. And this is demonstrative of it is, yeah, he had a responsibility to his team, but he also had a responsibility, as we said earlier, to himself. And he violated that responsibility. What was going on at the bar, whether the girl was racist or not, whether she was being aggressive or not for no reason, if you go to a concert, if you go to a bar, this is typical behavior, trying to box people out, keep your space, be physical about it. The number of elbows I get, the number of hips I get thrown into me at a concert is astronomical. But I don't go there often because I don't want to live the life these people are living and be put in those situations. Because if this had happened with just like, as Ronnie was saying, a non-FSU quarterback, then it wouldn't be a big deal. But he didn't hold himself to a different standard because he was living on a different standard. He had, I guess you could argue in a way, he internalized egalitarianism. He didn't see himself as different from anyone else when he was. And that's the important thing.
Let's face it. Let's just face the facts. He didn't live up to the FSU standard. And the FSU standard is pretty darn low.
That's true. He could have gone up and yelled things about, what was it? What did Jameis Winston yell about the crabs or whatever?
I mean, if you can throw touchdowns at FSU, there's usually nothing you can get away with except maybe punching a girl in the face. And he would have got, he would have gotten away with it if it hadn't have been on the camera.
That's true too. That's true too. We remember with Jameis Winston, he was accused of sexual assault, and we don't know what ever happened with that. So that's a great point. But let's move on to another a physical incident involving males here. The Federalist has a story called, "Behold, the Beta Males Who Feel Good About Watching a Man Die." Now, this headline is awful, and I'll get into that in a second. But let me read the first couple of paragraphs here. On the afternoon of July 4 in Washington, D.C., a teenager with a knife boarded a crowded metro train and attacked a 24-year-old man, Kevin Joseph Sutherland, stabbing him 30 or 40 times and kicking his head repeatedly until he was dead. No one tried to stop him. The Washington Post reports that, quote, "passengers trapped in the moving train huddled at both ends of the car and watched in horror," end quote, as the attack took place. There were about 10 people in the car, but no one intervened. They just watched Sutherland get beaten and stabbed to death right in front of them. Now, this author, John Daniel Davidson, continues to turn this into an alpha male versus a beta male thing, where he's saying people who aren't wusses and who aren't selfish, and he also turns it into a selfish thing, Elliot, people who aren't selfish would have risked their life to save this person. But instead, they cowered in fear and basically were not really men by letting this person be killed. What do you think of this article? What would you have done in this incident?
Like, I hate this tactic, first of all, in an article. The alpha male, the beta male. You know, we talk about feminism and it's, you know, detraction on society and on the relationship between the genders here in the mid-side a lot. But I think that it's starting to look like this alpha male, beta male thing is kind of becoming the male equivalent of that in a sense. The alpha male versus the beta male sort of thing, teaching people how to be a real man and that sort of thing. And this kind of attitude, the idea that if you're a real man, you should have, you know, confronted the teenager, ripped open your shirt and said, "let the blades hit me first," and tried to save him. Now, it's absurd. We're not sacrificial animals. We're not. You know what I mean? And, but on the other hand, because I do have a different take on the occurrence itself, the actual event, it does make me sick that, you know, 10 people could not overpower a teenager, you know, and that nobody tried to do anything. That does kind of make me sick, you know, but that doesn't mean that a person is obligated to act against irrational self-interest. And maybe they really did feel like they couldn't do anything, or that this kid was dangerous. Maybe he was absurdly good with a knife. Maybe he was in one of those little bastards from the Mission Impossible movies, you know? But I think, I know me personally, I would have tried to do something. Now, granted, I might have been stabbed to death in the attempt, but I would have tried something, because for me, I know myself to know that it is in my rational self-interest for me to objectively look at it and say, what can I live with? What is going, can I actually genuinely live with sitting here and letting a man die and not having done at least something to stop it? Is the pursuit of values possible with the guilt of knowing that somebody has died in front of me and I didn't do anything? Or could I move on from that? Could I, you know, and me personally, I don't think I could. I would have to do something. And I would add parenthetically that this is why we have a Second Amendment. This is why we need to have a Second Amendment, because things like this could happen, and they do happen every day, particularly if you live in a major city. People get stabbed and shot and beaten up in public all the time, and the throngs of the crowds just ignore them, step over them, walk over them, and this is why we need to be an armed society.
That's a really good point about the Second Amendment, because isn't this an example of people being too afraid to do anything, so nothing happens? Because I agree with you about the whole, you know, I could never let a man die thing. And that was my initial reaction too, is how do you watch someone get stabbed? But at the same time, Daniel told me a story where apparently there was some guy on the metro in LA and he had a gun and was shooting out the window, and nobody stopped him either. And I thought, well, it'd be really tough for me to stop that guy, even though I know he might be shooting people outside, because if he turns his gun on me and shoots me in the head, I'm done. And I wasn't doing anything wrong, and that would be a shitty way for my life to go. So there's a balance here. And I'm wondering, based upon what you said, Elliot, does the balance come from, do we end up where we end up, where no one wants to do anything because they're too afraid, because we've been told that people can't do anything, so nobody wants to act as a group? As Daniel described it to me, he said, I want to live in a society where you look around at everyone on the train and we're all like, yeah, we're going to get him at the same time. Because as an individual, it's dangerous. But if all 10 of you get together, you can sit on this kid, you can take the knife away, and he won't be able to stop you. Maybe one or two people get minorly scratched. But individually, if you just try to fight hand to hand, you're likely to get stabbed. Just because somebody else has a knife, that makes them a billion times more dangerous if they have any sort of a weapon. So is partially this not about alpha versus beta male, but more results of being told over and over again, protecting yourself isn't good, and you're not capable of protecting yourself, and you need other people to protect you.
Don't be a hero. That's what gets drummed into people's heads.
You know, Justin, you buzzed me a few days ago. Hey, come on the Midside. It's going to be fun. We'll talk about Obamacare and this beta male versus alpha male, where this poor man was stabbed while everybody watched. You know, it's been a funny week, and there's so many instances that happen. So you're wrong if you fly an antiquated flag with an antiquated symbol on it. And you're definitely wrong if you refuse to bake a cake to a certain couple, but it's okay to sit there and watch some dude get stabbed to death. You know, maybe I got a little bit of too much Charlie Bronson in my blood, but that's wrong. Now, is this article clickbait? Absolutely. Does he bring up United Flight 93? Yeah, and I think that's in awful taste. Yeah. I think it's just really, really bad taste to bring that up. But I don't care if the guy was 35-year-old UFC shoot fighter. You don't stand there and watch him stab a dude to death. If there's two of you, if there's 10 of you. It's very, the whole thing is just distasteful.
It's emblematic of what we talk about a lot about in a war between the savage and the civilized man. You know, who do you stand with? And this is very much a situation, almost the most concrete example of people, by remaining neutral and staying out of it, they sided with the savage, and the civilized man was killed for it.
does this happen? Does the guy get stabbed more than once or twice if one of those 10 people have a handgun? You know, how many of these tragedies get avoided if someone has a concealed permit carry like I have and they have a gun? They don't even have to take it off of safety. Sometimes just showing that you have one avoids violence. And I know that gets me in lots of trouble with many of my friends, but if you can save somebody's life, why wouldn't you do it?
Mm-hmm. No? So necessary. I think people talk, you know, people throw out emergency ethics, and unfortunately there are a lot of objectivists who do this. They say, well, my life is not, you know, I shouldn't have to sacrifice my life for another person. Like, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, can you live with and be the I'm trying to think of how to phrase it. It's necessary, I think, in defense of your rationality as a human being, that you have to stand against these kind of things. I mean, you have to. It is the most self-interested thing you can do in its positive sense to do this, to stand up against these people, because ultimately there's a lot more that you are standing up for than you fully realize in a moment like that.
Well, and I told you this thing sickens me, but there's a flip side of this, and I've got to mention it, is that they have the right to be cowards. They have the right to say, hey, I don't want to go get my hands cut or my throat cut. I don't want to give my life up for trying to save this other person. But, man, doesn't that mean that somebody else has the right to make a bad decision too? Maybe a non-life-threatening decision, like, I don't want to cater this wedding, or I don't want to serve this person.
Yes,
or
nice connection.
I want to fly my flag at Walmart.
Yeah.
I mean, believe me, and that's a touchy subject, especially down here in Dixie, but that's an antiquated symbol, and its time to be taken down off of a government building has passed decades ago. Let me make that perfectly clear. I will also defend the right of a dumb redneck to put it on his truck and drive up and down the parking lot of Walmart, because while I have never flown that flag or had a sticker on it on my car, I still believe in the man's freedom to do it. So these people, it's hard to find 10 people that would make that bad decision, but apparently there was 10 people on that train.
Well, it was in D.C., wasn't it? So I think that probably explains why 10
people... Oh, God. Why don't you kick somebody while they're down?
Well, I don't need to. The guy who killed the guy did that already, apparently. He stabbed him 30 to 40 times and then kicked him in the head repeatedly.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we all just need to take the same stance as Hannibal. Whenever possible, eat the rude. We'll talk about Hannibal and Comic-Con next in TV with JML. So, of course, after here in the midside, we put accolades upon a show and we talk about how great it is and how it's a great piece of romanticism. A few weeks later, not even a few weeks later, almost immediately, it's canceled. Hannibal kind of saw it coming down the pipeline because they moved it to the summer. It was on a Friday night. Now it's in the summer. That's kind of, you know, they're trying to get rid of it. Hannibal, Brian Fuller's amazing show, has been canceled. There's some hope in Amazon or Netflix may pick it up. That's what I'm hoping for. But arguably the best show on television is over, tragically, after I finally convinced Daniel to watch it and convinced many of you listeners to watch it. Have either of you seen Hannibal or have anything to say about it?
Well, I know that you liked it, and I'm sorry that it got canceled. And I'm here for you. My shoulder is yours to cry on.
I'm in the process of catching up. It's just real, real hard to binge watch everything at the same time, but I have mixed emotions about this. I like him being free to do more movies. He's one of my favorite actors working today. Mm-hmm. And I can't, I hope it gets picked up. I'm sorry that it's one of your favorite shows and it got canceled. But I think on a certain level, it's like, I know you feel the same way about this that I felt when HBO canceled Rome. And I was really mad for a little bit. And then I thought, you know what? Thank you, HBO, for giving me 2 years of Rome. And thank you, HBO, for giving me a couple years of Carnival, because nobody else was going to do that. And if you would have told Justin 4 years ago, okay, we're going to have a Hannibal TV show and it's going to be awesome. And, it's going to push the envelope of violence and storytelling all the way over the cliff. And you've never seen anything like this before. And we're going to give you 3 seasons. You would have probably said, I'll take that. So I know it's tough to swallow that pill, but it's a little bittersweet because you still got 3 apparently really good seasons of television.
That's true. I think this is the furthest a Brian Fuller series has gone, 3 seasons. So I guess we should look on the positive side here and say, hey, Brian Fuller finally got 3 seasons. Unlike where Dead Like Me, he left after 1, Wonder Falls had 1, and Pushing Daisies only had 2. Mockingbird Lane didn't even get a full series order. It was just a pilot. So yeah, I mean, especially because it's NBC, would you think NBC would have some sort of deep intellectual programming? Because NBC usually has very surface-level programming. So you're right, RJD, that's a great way of looking at it. I like
all networks have surface-level programming. You know, all 3 of those main networks mostly.
Yeah, NBC to me is the worst of the worst, though. Whenever I watch their premises, they're so hollow. Moving on, though.
This is the worst of the worst for me.
CBS, because of all the old people shows?
Yeah.
I guess you have to be a certain age.
I like Person of Interest, though, on CBS.
Of course you do. You like fucking procedurals.
It's not a procedural, and you need to trust me. It is such a good show.
CBS is the procedural network. We're going to get to you in a few weeks when I talk to you about Arrow after you've been trying to convince me to watch it. A little foreshadowing for longtime listeners here. I will be addressing Elliot's plea to watch Arrow eventually. So look for that in the next few weeks. What?
How much of it have you watched?
I've watched 3 or 4 episodes. I don't remember which yet. The last one I saw was when Captain Jack Harkness joined the cast.
Oh, that's just the beginning.
Yeah, but if he's a bad guy, I'm going to be so pissed. Because, oh, I can't see John Barrowman as a bad guy. I can't.
Oh, you have to. Oh, 4 episodes is not enough.
All right. I'll keep going. I'm going to keep going. Then
keep
we'll
going.
Address it. But yeah, there's more pressing nerd stuff right now because this is Comic-Con.
Woo!
And there's Comic-Con news. So let's just go through the list here. And let's just give our reactions. So they released a Doctor Who teaser. Elliot, you're a big Whovian. What'd you think of the Doctor Who teaser?
I just want to know who Maisie Williams is playing. She's Arya Stark, I guess, in Game of Thrones. And she's playing a character. Nobody really knows who she is, but apparently the character knows who the Doctor is, judging from the trailer. So, I don't know. It looks really exciting. But in typical, you know, Whovian fashion, the trailer is really nothing more than just like a quick clip cut of all the episodes and nothing really makes any kind of narrative sense. So we'll just have to see what's going to come. But I do like Peter Capaldi's new hair.
Really? I thought it looked ridiculous.
I don't know, but the ridiculousness of it is what I like. I like that it's a little, you know, foofy.
Thought he looked like a bird.
Well, you know, crazy hair. Trump's scarf. Yeah, I mean, like I'm kind of in and out on Doctor Who for the last 20 or 30 years, but really, man, I'm kind of excited about the new stuff. And are they having their best decade since the 80s?
Well, yeah, because Stephen Moffat's the showrunner. That's why.
I mean, he's resurrected that thing from being, you know, just the fringe fans to actually making it, I mean, it's the first thing we talk about when we talk about Comic-Con. That's pretty awesome. Somebody deserves a pat on the back. This guy's doing a great job.
That's all we need to say there. And let's talk about the other franchise he's done an amazing job with that you would think a Sherlock Holmes adaptation is this popular, but people are so rabid for this thing. And, there was more news. They released a picture of Sherlock and, Watson. And apparently, I didn't know this, has been out for a while, but the new Sherlock episode, the Christmas special, is going to be set in the Victorian era. That's yeah, very strange to me. Is this the finally, is this the Doctor Who crossover finally?
I would love that, actually. But no, this is, it's interesting. They're having this is the Christmas special, and then I think they have three episodes that are going to debut next year. So this is kind of like their, in between, you know, specials, in between season special. It looks really cool. They released the first few minutes of the episode, I think on BBC Player, iPlay or something like that. And it's already all over the internet, and it's really cool. They're all in Victorian garb and smoking pipes and everything. It looks really cool.
How though? How are they going to go to Victorian era? I don't understand. How do you do it without time travel? Is it a dream? Is it one of these, let's tell the story of if Sherlock did this, hypothetically? I want to know.
I don't think it matters. I think you just, there's no explanation. It's just, hey, this is a Christmas special. You know, I mean, do you want to see him like get bumped on the head in the first 5 minutes and then dream that he's in the Victorian era? Do you want that? I mean, or do you want like H.G. Wells' time machine to send him back? I mean, just do it, you know? We are not confined by the constraints of storytelling. So just show it. I'm excited. I mean, I like the modern setting because it was different. But after a couple years, I kind of miss the old school setting. And I'm excited to see these actors and these characters in the old school setting. And I know a lot of people that are as well.
Well said. And speaking of things that you kind of get sick of after a few years, The Walking Dead released its season 6 trailer at Comic-Con, as well as its spinoff series, Fear the Walking Dead, released their trailer. We finally got to see footage of what that series is going to be like. Do either of you have any impressions of either of these trailers?
No.
Elliot, I figured you'd say no. You don't watch it. Ronnie, do you have any thoughts on The Walking Dead, on the trailer?
I like the trailer. I haven't watched it in a couple seasons, and I'm still on the fence of whether I'm going to go back and catch up and binge watch, because I really, the first 5 episodes I really loved, and I really loved lots of season 2. I know a lot of people hated season 2, but
season 2 is the best season by far.
I mean, there were just some, I mean, you could cut the tension every second with a knife, and a lot of that was because of the Shane character. And you know, it's like, how many kids can you see killed or zombified before you just say, okay, I'd rather watch something else, you know? And since I like superheroes, then it's not a difficult choice for me to just spend my time catching up on television watching superheroes as opposed to children getting killed. It's a well-made show, and I like the trailer. It's just, when it's done, I'm sure I'll go back and I'll finish watching it. But right now, my cup overflows with it. It's a tough one for me to say because it is filmed right here in my backyard.
Yeah, that's true. You could go down and spit on the set probably.
They film about 4 blocks from one of my friend's homes in Georgia.
Oh, well, I'd have to send you on location sometime. But the thing for me about the trailer was it reminded me, very ironically, of Game of Thrones, where it was like, who's going to win the Alexandrian throne? Is it going to be Rick or Deanna? Or what about Morgan? And then what about these wolves people? And don't forget the walkers. So it's funny to me how arguably the two most popular shows on television, The Walking Dead and Game of Thrones, are sort of getting closer and closer together in the way they're being produced and their narrative thrust. It's almost the same thing, like, you have a lot of tension between all these different people, and it's all just a game to survive for power, and you're going to kill off a number of characters every season. So I just thought that was an interesting cultural phenomenon that both these really popular shows have sort of the same things going on.
I think
it reminded you of The Strain.
Of what, Elliot?
Of The Strain. Didn't it remind you of The Strain?
Oh, no, we'll get to that. That's the Fear the Walking Dead trailer. So if you look at the Fear the Walking Dead trailer, to me, it was an evidence of everything that was awful about The Walking Dead. So my main problem with The Walking Dead is it's too naturalistic at times, same thing with Game of Thrones, where it's just sort of meandering and there's no real ultimate goal to it or theme that they're trying to portray and tell as a story. And I thought Fear the Walking Dead was exactly that. It was just saying, hey, what happens if we saw the apocalypse break out and we just captured that? Whereas you look at The Strain, and The Strain has a very strong theme. It's about how can the love of the, you know, the people we love be used against us? How can our greatest supposed strength be our greatest weakness? So when I was watching the Fear the Walking Dead trailer, I was like, this just looks like a more boring version of The Strain, because the first season of The Strain was how does the apocalypse start?
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, absolutely. And you're going to see more and more of, well, the trailer for this season has elements of the Game of Thrones in it. You're going to see so much more of that. Unfortunately, it's a hard recipe to do. You know, you can't just regurgitate the success of that. And that show is in flux. That show is not the same show it was in season one and season two. I had a painful experience last night, and the experience was I watched a trailer for the Shannara Chronicles, and the visuals were like, these are the books I read when I was a teenager, like Elfstones of Shannara and the Sword of Shannara. And then the music was like MTV. I don't even know. I don't even watch MTV anymore. I'm sure there's a show on it that plays music. Maybe I'm wrong, but you know, it's like, let's take the Game of Thrones and mix it with Vampire Diaries. Well, you just ruined one of my childhood memories, and I'm not one of these, they raped my childhood, but, you know, it's...
Well, apparently the Shannara Chronicles show is actually by MTV, so that's why they have all that music in it, because they're really big on their shows of placing modern contemporary bands as the music for shows.
Yeah, so that you've got elves and Rihanna music in the same scene. I don't see how that works. You know, maybe I'm going to have to watch it with subtitles and the mute button. I don't know. It looks beautiful. The cast looks good, albeit a bunch of young teen models. But, you know, you're going to see more Game of Thrones clones. You're going to see, let's make this zombie show more like Game of Thrones. You're going to see a police procedural that's going to be more like Game of Thrones. Who's going to win? You've got all these factions. Oh, by the way, let's just kill off a main character because we can. You're going to see more of them copying that success. And sometimes they don't actually get what makes that show so successful. When they try to copy characteristics of it, they miss the point. And I'm afraid that's what they're going to do with Shannara, which is a wonderful series of books. Terry Brooks is amazing.
Well, yeah, and it's what they're doing with Scream right now, too, where they're just kind of take the trappings of it. And, I mean, I haven't seen it, but I would assume it's the same sort of principle.
They changed the mask. They changed the mask. It's not the same. Why? Why? Oh, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah,
sorry.
Let's get into something, Elliot, that'll make you happier. You were very excited this week with some kind of obscure Comic-Con news, where Eli Roth came out about his new movie, Green Inferno. Why were you excited about that?
Oh, this was so good. Okay, Eli Roth, like us, is very upset and sick of this kind of Twitter clicktivism is what we call it, where people think that they're participating in some sort of a movement because they retweet something a bunch of times or because they post things on their Facebook timeline, but they don't actually translate actions into reality. This kind of social justice war kind of thing that's going on, he actually uses that term. So director Eli Roth, whom I'll be honest, I'm not really that big a fan of. His work is not really something I like to sit through. I don't find his work to be pleasant to see. And I like horror movies, but he doesn't resonate with me. But he just announced that he's releasing this movie called The Green Inferno. And the story of which is these kind of millennial clicktivists who get a chance to do some of their social justice, you know, goody two shoes kind of actions in a, and it was someplace overseas. Well, their plane crashes, and the very people that they were trying to save, you know, in terms of the environment, in terms of their, I don't know, they just wanted to help out in some way. And they get kidnapped, abducted by this tribe, and it turns out that the tribe is cannibalistic. So they literally are eaten alive by their own pet cause. And it is a little bit of a schadenfreude kind of thing with me, because I mean, we've talked about people who they wage war on different things. They try to create these political movements and social movements on the internet, and it either doesn't translate into reality, or the few times where it actually does go into reality, they it's so short-sighted, badly planned, and they wind up not really making that much of an impact anyway. Because ultimately, a lot of these people, they don't operate on principle. They operate just because they want to be part of something. It's that collectivistic desire to join a bigger group. So I'm eager to see what Eli Roth is going to do with that, because he's sick of it just like we are. And that's really the theme of the Green Inferno. You know, how, you know, the idea that people who want to be these, you know, hippy-dippy, Greenpeace, you know, save these primitive tribes and the Amazon, and how bad capitalism is and how bad society, American society is, and then what happens when they actually are confronted with a non-American, non-civilized society. I'm excited to see this, I have to say.
Another movie to be excited about that's coming in the future is it was finally announced that Ben Affleck will direct the Batman movie. Is this reason to be excited? Or is this just DC trying to jump on the Hollywood trendy bandwagon? Or could we finally see a superhero movie be Oscar nominated?
I don't know if it's going to be Oscar nominated or not, other than I don't think you're ever going to get an Oscar nominated superhero film other than an occasional performance like what you got with Heath Ledger, which was a wonderful performance, but the nomination and the win was more about him passing away after he did it. But look, this is what everybody wanted. That's the one trump card that DC has played to the hilt of, let's go get Affleck, because you get more than just him as Batman. You get a guy that he doesn't have one Oscar. He has multiple Oscars. He has an Oscar for best director. I mean, this is something that they can actually put on the shelf and say, hey, everybody, check this out. And I know a lot of people like some of the DC casting, and I'm not crazy about a lot of the stuff they've done, but I'm crazy about this. I mean, I believe in Ben Affleck.
Is that a reference to Harvey Dent? I believe in Harvey Dent. I believe in
Ben Affleck. I would hope so. I would hope people get it. But I mean, I Ben Affleck was one of the three people, I was putting online that, hey, I wish they would get him as Batman. You know, here's a guy who has been, look, let's face it, Ben Affleck has been to the mountain and Ben Affleck has been to the valley. You know, he was as high as you could get. He won an Oscar for Good Will Hunting, and then he was as low as you can get. He was on the cover of the tabloids with J-Lo, and he was toxic, and no one was going to put him in a movie where he starred. And so he just quietly rolled up his sleeves and started doing good work. And when I saw The Town, I thought, wow, Ben is back. And he wins the Oscar for Argo. That's the kind of talent that these studios, if you're going to spend $200 million on a superhero movie, that's the kind of talent you want behind one of these films. You don't want the guy that made Sucker Punch doing a one of these $200 million films. You want the guy that made Argo in The Town.
Oh, wow.
We'll disagree here. I agree with what you're saying about bringing Affleck in and everything, but this is just a disagreement over the perception of Snyder. And the broader point here is that DC, much more than Marvel, is taking a filmmaker-based approach, where they're bringing in people who they believe are filmmakers because they saw what Nolan did with the Dark Knight trilogy, and they're bringing these people in to make films rather than make an overall cohesive universe. So we're seeing them develop a different strategy than Marvel. And we can disagree and argue all day over Snyder. You're never going to convince me otherwise that he's a filmmaker.
Mixed bag. He's a mixed bag for me. There's a lot of stuff I agree with you on, and there's a lot of stuff I don't agree with you on Snyder, but I think both, I mean, there's not a problem. There's not saying one way's right and one way's wrong. I like that they're having a different approach, and I think both of them can work.
Right, and hopefully DC experiences a lot of success as well, because I'm sort of burnt out on Marvel. And speaking of something else I've been burnt out on my entire life, do you guys have anything you want to share about the Star Wars panel that was the other day, on the second day of Comic-Con? Because I don't even know what happened because I don't pay attention, but I figured this is big news we should cover here.
They released a special behind-the-scenes little featurette, I guess, at Comic-Con. First, I mean, at the actual panel, they had Carrie Fisher, they had Mark Hamill, and Harrison Ford, his first appearance after this plane crash, he was there. So it was a huge deal to have him there. And then showing the behind-the-scenes footage and showing how they're not going the CG route. Abrams is building sets, like actual physical sets, and they're actually shooting in the desert. They're not recreating the desert digitally. They're shooting out in the desert. I mean, and just all the detail and the work and the preparation that they're showing, because they know that the fans, especially the ones that go to Comic-Con, that are going to go to these panels, they know that they're going to appreciate that detail. So it was really exciting to see. I mean, I have to admit, I nerded out. I queened out.
How can I follow that? Yeah, I loved it. And I started thinking about halfway through, man, JJ's going to pull this off. Because the bar for what he has to accomplish, I mean, all he's got to do is be better than the prequels.
Yep.
I'm not trying to be funny, and I'm not going to tell you how bad those films are or whatever, but if he's just better than the prequels, this is a win for JJ. This is a win for the Star Wars franchise. God forbid he makes something special, and it's as good as Return of the Jedi. And I don't rank Return of the Jedi very high. There are four or five scenes in the Return of the Jedi that are just fantastic. The rest of the film is not that good, in my opinion. But if he makes something as good as Return of the Jedi, then his whole, the number one, the perception of the Star Wars franchise has changed back to where you've got people like me that have been pretty much zoned out for 15 years. I'm back in it full force. And the perception of J.J. Abrams has changed. He's not just somebody that takes a franchise that's already there and plugs in something that makes money. Because the Star Trek films, regardless of what you think of them, they just made money. They're not great art. Nobody's going to remember them in 15 years. 15 years, people are still going to watch in Wrath of Khan when it comes on television. 15 years, nobody's going to remember Star Trek Into Darkness or whatever the name of it is. So this is a huge film. It's a huge film for Disney. It's a huge film for JJ. And I'm starting to believe in him.
I think he can do it because I think this is the one thing he's been preparing for his entire life. Everything he has done has just sort of been to prepare him for this moment. I'm not saying he knew it was coming, but you can see the Star Wars influences over everything he does, from Lost to the new Star Trek movies. And it's almost like the new Star Trek movies were preparation for this. So I think he can pull it off. It'll be interesting for me as an impartial, uninterested observer. I will be interested in seeing how people react to this movie and to see sort of how the critics react, how the general population reacts, how the hardcore Star Wars fans react, because I could see it going in any number of directions, and I don't think there's an agenda out there yet. Usually when a movie comes out, you can see people who have an agenda pushing it a certain way. Like before Avatar came out, you knew there'd be an agenda because, you know, people want to push Cameron, people want to push the environmental agenda. But with this movie, I really don't know what's going to happen, and that intrigues me.
Well, it's not a reboot, but it is it's kind of a form of a reboot because it's been so many years since you had the original cast, and it's not going to have any ties. And he recently came out and said that it's not really, there's nothing, you're not going to see, Jar Jar Binks, you're not going to have any references to the prequels. So it's really a continuation of movies that are over 30 years old. So in a form, it's a reboot. And the trick with reboots is it's so hard to recapture that magic. And one of the things that was magic about those original three films is the cast. I mean, Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, Billy Dee Williams, James Earl Jones's voice. How you replace that, and if you can even get close to replacing that, is going to be whether this is, hey, let's go see Star Wars film because it's Star Wars, or, okay, this is something special that will be revered for 30 years.
Agreed. I don't think there's a much better way to say it than that. So let's move on to a much more sort of controversial segment, I guess, these days, because when we were on Yahoo Answers changed and is no longer usable anymore. And now that we're using Reddit, Reddit was almost shut down. Thankfully, we got enough content from it, though, for Reddit on Reddit. Sony stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way. EA blows, Steam rocks, God rest for my Firefox. These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, whoring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't post it, but we will repost it. First Reddit. What is, quote, your move when you see an attractive stranger of the opposite sex? And I just want to say, before you guys answer this, I appreciated the fact that when I clicked through, it said, shit, it's 2015 or same sex. Because when I read this, I was like, well, I have to preface this for Elliot. And then, they changed the top answer changed here. So I won't say what the top answer is anymore because I thought the original top answer was funny, but they've changed it now. The top answer now is actually kind of depressing. It says, drink a lot of alcohol and hope drunk me finds a way. I think that's the way most people are, isn't it? That seems to have been my experience with why people were drinking, at least when I was around the drinking culture a lot. But what's your guys' answer to this? Do you guys have a move? Because my move is my mind goes blank and I'm just like, and they walk away.
Let Ronnie answer because mine's really kind of a little fucked up.
Uh-oh.
I think time and place dictates what you talk to, but the most important thing that's always worked for me is be yourself. That's why it doesn't work most of the time. But if I don't offend you or become too abrasive in the first 5 minutes, you're usually a keeper. I guess, unfortunately, in college, it probably should have been talking about X-Men and Batman cartoons. But it wasn't. So now it's probably talking about X-Men and Batman's cartoons, which is probably equally ineffective. But, if they have a Secret Wars comic and I'm talking about the original, then, it might be a love connection.
So you just start talking about like Batman Beyond?
I don't hate Batman Beyond. It's not one of my favorites, but, it could be something special if that's there.
Elliot?
I have the best move to have is no move. Just be yourself. And then if they like you, then that's cool. And then if they don't like you, then there's plenty of fish in the sea.
Yeah, it's so tough though. Most people don't have that sort of self-confidence. Wow, I can't even say self-confidence. It's tough though because most people don't have that self-confidence or self-assuredness to just be able to go up to someone and just strike up a normal conversation. You always feel like you have to have sort of like some tactics and strategy involved with
it. Yeah,
that, exactly,
I mean,
right.
There's books and stuff that talk about tactics and strategies, and that's, just ignore that. Just be yourself. And if they don't like you, cool. Then at least you didn't spend, you know, 6 days, 6 months, 6 years making a mistake with somebody who doesn't immediately like you. I'm interested to hear Elliot's answer.
Yeah, Elliot said his answer is going to be kind of fucked up, so what is it?
Okay, let me set the scene. First of all, a few years ago, I wrote a spec script for a television series called Leverage, and it didn't go anywhere.
Before the show Leverage came out?
No, while the show was airing. It was like
third season. You wrote an episode of it, okay.
Like a spec script for an episode.
Gotcha.
And that didn't lead to anything. But to do it, I had to do a lot of research, you know, on things like cons and particularly grifting, you know, because one of the characters, Sophie Devereaux, and she's the best grifter in the world. And so on that show, they talk a lot about neurolinguistic programming and body positions and statures and stuff like that. And it's funny because I incorporated a lot into my work because, you know, when you work for the mouse, you want to be open, you want to be engaging, and you want to try to diffuse hostile guest situations before they get to you. And a lot of that can happen if you say the right words and if you're standing in the right way. And, one of the things that I read was if you want to kind of get somebody like a little bit more interested in you, like aroused or something, not aroused. I don't think they use that word. What you do is you look at them in their eyes. And the reason why is because if you look at them directly in the eyes, it sets off the brain's fight or flight response, which is part of, you know, it's it's a part of the brain that also is linked very closely to a romantic, almost sexual kind of feeling. So depending on what else you do, if you look at somebody directly and you're also facing them directly and, you know, kind of mimicking their movements a little bit, then that's a very good way to kind of get on the same wavelength as you.
So you're saying a way to get someone just to get someone's attention. It's not necessarily a way to make them like you or anything, but just to let them know you're actually here. Because a lot of people are like, "Oh, do they even pay attention to me?"
Well, it's like it's a way to hold interest in a way. You know what I mean? And it's effective in a lot of ways because it's good for my job. It's good for interpersonal relationships, even if you're not necessarily looking to hook up with somebody. But it's good to kind of. To have control over your posture and over what you're projecting out there. So that's mine. The reason why I say it's a little fucked up is because I think as I say it, it sounds very manipulative and really, really bad. But it's not. Like, I don't use my powers for evil. I use them for good.
Well, I don't think it assures that someone likes you. It just assures they actually really look at you. And I think that's the difference.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people we don't really look at. I mean, especially being out here in California, you just walk by people. You don't take time to actually look at a person. But if you look at someone straight in the eyes and you mimic their body language or you show a strong, confident posture, you're forcing them to actually take account of you and say, hey, is this person good or not? Because what you're talking about, it's registering the fight or flight because you have to immediately assess what value this person is to you initially. So that's that's a good idea. So let's move on to the next Reddit, which is somewhat similar because, Elliot, what you're talking about is kind of gone in today's society. And this Reddit is a shower thought that's one of their sub things, their subreddits is r/shower thoughts. It's a shower thought that kind of puts a point on what you're saying. Thanks to dating apps, many people will first lay eyes on the love of their lives while evacuating their bowels. And this is a funny way of saying to me that what you're talking about, Elliot, is gone. You don't have the initial impression anymore. You look at a picture, but that person could be someone you meet in real life that you look in the eyes and absolutely can't stand. But they look good in a picture.
Yeah. I mean, those dating apps only go so far, right? I mean, they're good to give you like a sense of how a person looks, but you have to, you never can eliminate the first impression. Because that has to be an interpersonal, in reality, exchange. It has to happen. So it'll never be eliminated. You might eliminate the surprise of how they look, but that first interaction will always have to happen. So no matter what, it's always going to have to be there.
RJD, any comments on dating apps?
On the immortal words of Dick Cheney, pass.
All right, let's hit the last Reddit here. What is something that poor people do that keeps them poor? This is a mid-side question if I've ever heard one before. And the reason is we have this idea in society that people stationed in life, they're not responsible for. And I'm not going to sit here and claim that everything a person is a result of their choices and their actions. And, you know, there are certainly people who have fallen on hard luck and there are people who are poor, not to their own doing. But pretty generally, people make choices that keep them in the situations they're in. And what are some of those choices that people do that harm themselves that will keep them, you know, not earning more money or not, you know, keeping more of the money they earn?
Well, no budget. They don't budget their money.
I think that's the big one right there. No budget.
I think the kid that punched the girl in the face had a huge impact on the amount of money he's going to make over his life.
And so it goes back to what you were saying earlier, RJD, about not realizing how your choices impact each other. And he didn't reconceptualize himself and think, there's more going on here than if I simply defend myself. Or he didn't think, why am I going to the bar with all of these other people? All of these other people aren't the FSU starting quarterback or have the potential to be the starting quarterback.
But just to apply that to this question is like always know who you are, always know what's at stake. So don't make a decision that's going to potentially screw something up. And, you know, the answer to this question is keep you poor for years or keep you poor forever.
Or keep you minimizing your earning impact. This kid may not end up poor, but you know, he could have been making, like we said, at least six figures on a practice squad at minimum. And now he's not going to make anywhere close to that. So maybe he won't end up poor, but think of the standard of life that the change was there.
Well, everybody's not going to be a professional athlete, but you can take that same outline and you can apply it to everybody can apply it to their own life. You know, I see a lot of young people, and we hire a lot of young people in my business, and you see these resumes and there are 15 jobs, and you know, there's something to be said of, hey, you maybe you laid out at this one job and you lost it. Maybe you broke the rules at this one job and you lost it. But if you stay at one place, you build a career, then all of a sudden you're making real money in 2 or 3 years, as opposed to you just got a new job and you started at the beginning. I mean, you know, I don't know. I guess the best answer to that question is something that poor people do that keeps them poor is they spend too much damn money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they try to live above their standard of living. And it's also, to me, what a lot of people do is they live for the weekend. And what I mean by that is, I don't just mean like literally waiting for the weekend to come, but I also mean their life is about the things they do to escape from their life or divert their own attention from their life. So they don't say, what's the life I want to have? They say, okay, how can I get through another day? What's going to help me get through another day and make me feel good for another day?
And this is something that kind of clamoring for $15 an hour is, you know, like a lot of these fast food workers are doing and a lot of these places, that's not going to fix anything. Like when you say, oh, we're barely surviving, that doesn't speak to your earning. That speaks to your behavior. No matter what, you've got to change your behavior. You've got to save money. You need to budget. Yeah. Nobody should be protesting for $15 an hour unless, in fact, I think that should almost be a law. It shouldn't be a law, obviously.
Well,
but I kind of feel like if you're going to protest for $15 an hour, first show that you are budgeting and doing everything responsibly with $10 an hour or whatever the minimum wage is in your state, you know?
You have to know the context of your life as well. Like, I know over the next few months or so, I'm going to have to get my brakes redone. Now, it's not going to be the whole, like, take the whole brakes out and everything, but you need maintenance on your brakes, and that can run $250 to $500. So I'll have enough of a comfort pad there to be able to do that and not have it affect my standard of living and hurt me. And that's part of what budgeting is knowing your context.
Yeah, well, the context I see it in is I really feel like people should be paid for what they're worth. I want to be paid for what I'm worth. I want to pay people for what they're worth. I want people to be paid for what they're worth. So if that makes me sound a little mean, some of these jobs, it's not meant to be. It's just meant to be, I think people should be paid for what they're worth. And if you can be replaced by a computer where people order the hamburgers, you might want to rethink about marching to change that minimum wage.
Yeah, and again, that goes to think about what kind of life you want and work towards it. So if you can be replaced by a computer, make it so you can't be replaced by a computer. Then you'll get more than your $10 minimum wage.
Man, it's hard to learn a trade when you're playing video games and on Facebook all the time.
Yeah. Very, very true. So then, let's put a cap on this episode. So the people listening, hopefully you're at your job. Or you can just get off of Facebook and go do something to improve your station in life. What did we learn this week? Elliot?
I learned that we here in the Midside apparently have a thing for cannibalism between between The Walking Dead and Hannibal and The Green Inferno. Yeah, there's something about cannibalism that keeps finding its way into our discussions.
Ronnie?
I learned that we can start a discussion with Obamacare and end it with what poor people do to keep them poor. we can have some good Comic-Con filler in the middle.
That's what we do here in the Midside. We keep things interesting that way. We talk about everything.
Yes, you do. And I want to thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure. We don't always agree, but it's always fun.
Well, I think the only thing we disagreed on is Zack Snyder. And what I learned there is I got to convert Ronnie more here. I got to convert RJD here more to the Snyder love. But no, we don't always agree, but it's okay because we have respect for each other, which is something that's often missing in these communities, in these discussions, which is, you know, that's something that's important to us here in the Mid-Side.
Respect for someone on the internet? Is that even a thing now?
I don't think there's respect for people in daily
that's
life.
So
forget
like,
the internet.
That's like respect for people. That's like so 2006.
And if you respect us like it's 2006, why don't you show us with some iTunes love? That's right. With no Daniel here this week, I am left to plugging. I've never done this before in my life. I've never shilled. I've always felt like this was sort of shameful. But now I am being shameless. That's right, Daniel. If you are listening to this, I have learned from you. If you respect us, if you loved RJD's guest appearance here this week, give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Let us know. Or tell a friend. Either or, let's get this podcast rolling. We've got some good content here, and I think we deserve to have a bigger audience than we do. So I would appreciate you helping us out. I'm Justin M. Wisniewski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the Mid-Side. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day!
Justin, I just want you to know that I wouldn't let somebody stab you 40 times without stepping in. And, Elliot, I would bake you a cake.
Aw, that's so sweet. Thank you.
Oh, I'm totally going to make that a drop. That was awesome.